Are you passionate about our region and its future? Do you want Geelong to be more livable, innovative and resilient? Then connect with Geelong Sustainability, a community group working to create a smarter, fairer, healthier future for Geelong.
The Sustainable Hour.
Geelong Sustainability.
Sponsoring The Pulse.
Good morning, listeners. Welcome to another edition of The Sustainable Hour. We'd like to pay tribute to the Wathaurong people, the custodians of the land on which we are working at the moment. We like to pay tribute to their elders past, present and those to come, and acknowledge the great work that One Fire is doing in Geelong for reconciliation.
And we are, I think, in a bit of a watershed moment in the Sustainable Hour in Geelong region, because last night, breaking news, Geelong now has a clever and creative future ahead of us.
Woohoo!
At least we have a clever and creative future vision, which was endorsed by council last night. It has been an entire year in the process, and remember, we started talking about it a year ago. So, question is this something to celebrate? You know, in council last night, there wasn't any, I didn't see any champagne bottles popping or stuff like that, but there was a good spirit. We'll be talking with Chief Administrator Dr. Cathy Alexander about that just in a moment. But I think first, let's just rewind to last night so you just get a glimpse of the atmosphere there, just as, you know, the news were broken and the meeting ended shortly after. And I had a chat with the project leader, Simone Boer, who also has been in the studio here numerous times during the year. She is just about to go on maternity leave. I think this was her last working day or something like that. But here was a different kind of baby that was born last night, and one that really cries out, it's time for change, Geelong, it's time for change. Here's Simone's first response to the birth of this new clever and creative vision baby that we have in Geelong now.
The official count was that we had 16,000 voices directly engaged. However, from a community perspective, we had over 20,000 people who were actually directly involved in the project, and we reached, in terms of readership, over several hundred thousand. So it's quite a significant journey we have been on over the last year. How does it feel? We've had some incredibly positive coverage from the local media, from a lot of the community members, from the organisation itself, and it just shows that all of the hard work to bring a community to consensus, because at the end of the day, there's some very, very clear themes around a consensus from the community with their aspirations, and it's just fantastic to see that this is a great platform to move forward to essentially transform our region into a clever and creative city region.
So a couple of months ago, we had the assembly where 350 people were sort of making a decision on which direction we should go in. Out of four choices, we chose the clever and creative one, clearly. Since then, has there been a lot of work on the paper, or is it more or less the same as it was back then?
It is more or less the same. What we have done since then is add in the aspirations. So we've gone and looked at what other aspirations other cities have done, and we've tried to push ourselves even further. And that's been the bulk of the work over the last 2 months since that community consensus.
So does that mean figures and numbers, something we can measure, or what
Absolutely.
Does it mean?
Absolutely, figures and numbers. And with those figures and numbers, you can see that on the council website, www.geelongaustralia. website, and you'll see those figures and numbers and those targets exactly, and we're going to be starting to measure the region against those figures and numbers and tracking that every single year in terms of how we are progressing as a city region towards those aspirations.
The next 30 years will see Geelong face challenges and meet opportunities. In 2017, Geelong is looking forward to developing a picture of what our region will look like, ensuring a thriving, inclusive and sustainable future. The Assembly overwhelmingly voted the Greater Geelong should be an internationally renowned, clever and creative city region that is forward-looking, enterprising and open, and cares for its people and the environment. feedback over the 9-month Our Future engagement process emphasised that we must unite to pursue this aspiration. We'll develop infrastructure that will allow us to trade and interact globally. A fair and responsible community ensures that everyone has access to the opportunities that will be created. Planning appropriately will be vital so we can improve our regional lifestyle and protect our environment. Turning our aspiration to be regarded as a clever and creative city region into a reality will involve our whole community, including partnership between all three levels of government and collaborations involving local business and community groups. Our future Geelong, it's only just begun.
The baby is just born. You can, of course, read a lot more about this, even while we're talking about it here. If you have a computer screen in front of you, go to geelongaustralia.com.au. It's a front page story there. Click on the link and go in and, for instance, see the little video. It's a 2.5-minute video that we just heard a clip from here that explains, as you could hear, what the idea is with this vision. But you can also download this piece of paper, and I think it's really valid. We should all be reading this. This is Geelong's new Bible. Come on. I think this is really, really an important piece of paper. Rusty, you look a bit skeptic?
Oh, no, certainly not.
Okay.
I just had a great deal of difficulty getting it off-site.
Ah, okay, downloading the PDF and all that.
Well, it wasn't there.
Well, we can, you know, be a bit of service there on our Facebook page, The Sustainable Hour. We'll, of course, put a direct link out where you can download
it. I think it's there
it.
Now, but it wasn't
okay, that could be as well,
on
yeah.
the due date.
Yeah.
So.
What were the images that were being shown while that? Is it, are they noteworthy?
Well,
it take a look really at the video. Powerful.
Yeah. No, well,
just to encourage people.
Basically, there were a lot of images from this assembly that we had some months ago,
yep.
where about almost 400 people were meeting at the pier and discussing which way to go. This was a very important moment in the process with these 400 people there. Let's hear what our chief administrator, Dr. Cathy Alexander, had to say when I talked to her just an hour ago. She's a busy woman, and I could just get 10 minutes of her time this morning over the phone. I asked her, first of all, to tell us how had the last process been since the assembly. Has it been a lot of pressure, for instance? You know, when the final document has to be done, has there been a lot of internal discussions and so on? Here's what she said.
It has been reasonably frantic in the last month. The assembly was a fabulous event because, to be perfectly honest, I've never seen 400 people so enthusiastic at the beginning of the day all the way through to the end of the day. No one left. It was incredibly engaging and a wonderful event. They considered all of the evidence that and information that had been provided in relation to the community consensus that had been developed over the months of the consultation process, and they had to decide on four scenarios. They had to debate and deliberate on four scenarios, and there was a huge consensus around the scenario of the City of Greater Geelong being recognised nationally and internationally as a clever and creative city region. So there was a real buzz about that, and I have not, in the months since then, I have not actually had anybody say that's the wrong vision. So, you know, I think that there's an enormous amount of support in the community and also amongst the community leaders for the kinds of initiatives and aspirations that the community came up with in this process. So that's a really exciting. We've worked hard with our partners to deliver a document that addresses all of those issues, and that's been supported by our partners in the process. So really, the big issue now is how do we ensure that over the next, you know, 10 to 15 to 20 years, we chip away at every opportunity we've got to implementing a strategy to achieve this vision. The important thing is that what we have done last night is we have both endorsed the vision for the City of Greater Geelong, but also we've endorsed a process which ensures that future councils who are required under the legislation to do a four-year plan and a four-year associated resource plan, actually align that plan to the major, to this vision and strategy. So that they need to be able to account to the community for how their priorities over the four-year term that they've got actually align to this vision and how they can contribute to the measures contained in this vision and strategy. So that's the first thing. The second thing that we did last night was to confirm that it is a requirement of councils to actually report on the progress of their four-year plan on an annual basis in relation to the vision and the strategy. So they have to do these things under legislation, but what we now have is a resolution that identifies that they need to report against this vision and strategy. So the next council will come in and make its contribution to this, and then the council after that, in another 4 years' time, will come in and make its contribution to it. And at around the sort of 15 to 20-year mark, it's probably advisable to refresh the vision and strategy and do some more work on, well, okay, how far have we got so far? What do we need to tweak? What do we need to change for the next sort of 10 to 15 years?
Has there been any response to, for instance, the big issues here in Geelong are such things as jobs, as whether we have growth or not, climate change, these big issues that are ahead of us in the horizon, have they been addressed or debated in this process?
Well, the whole consultation process actually started up off on a framework. The community wasn't just given a blank sheet and said, let's have a thought bubble. There's been a lot of research and a lot of evidence around, and we used that evidence base before we started consulting. And we also informed the community through a whole range of methods about that evidence base. And firstly, and very importantly, the challenges that every city in the world faces were put down, and people were told any plan that we have has to address the following four issues. Firstly, and importantly, it has to address population growth here in Geelong. That, you know, don't put your head in the sand. This is a growing community. It's going to double the population at the very least within the next 20-odd years, and that is a challenge that we must plan for. Secondly, climate change. We must plan for climate change. We must try and improve our resilience to climate change. Thirdly, economic uncertainty globally is now, is now commonplace. We must actually accept that uncertainty needs to be addressed. And fourthly, the technological advances are both opportunities and threats if we don't keep up with them. So all of those four fundamental changes and challenges that every city faces have to be addressed by this plan. And then the other part of the evidence that we gave them was that there's very good research around now to show that the very successful cities address those challenges whilst balancing, designing around people. Now, that sounds a funny thing to do, but cities and regions must be designed around people, not around cars, not around buildings, around people and how people use the city and the region and how it's comfortable for them to do it. And secondly, they must be creative cities. Anywhere you go in the world that you really like being, they're a bit edgy, they're a bit different. They do something a bit creative and innovative and outside the square. Thirdly, they're prosperous, but equitably so. They're not prosperous so that a lot of people have a lot of money and a lot of people don't have much at all. We look for ensuring that everybody in the community has access to a good life. Fourthly, that they are sustainable and resilient. And lastly, and potentially even most importantly, that they're connected. They're connected regionally within the city region. They're connected with other cities that are important to them. They're connected nationally and they're connected internationally. And these days, that's not just through transport modes, that's actually also through the internet. So I think those, we gave the community that data, that research and that information and said, now think about Geelong. Tell us where we are in relation to all those elements of a successful city. And the community basically gave us a 50% rating and told us that we had a 50% gap on most of those issues. And then we asked them, tell us, how do you think we should close those gaps? And out of that, there was a huge amount of consensus around what sort of aspirations the community had to ensure that we were 100% in relation to those elements of a successful city, and that we balance that with addressing these key challenges that every community's got.
What is already now the response to this vision within council? I'm talking about the employees, the people who will be there after you have left, and no matter which council we have, there are people employed in council. What do they say to this vision?
Well, the council staff have been very much involved in the development of this vision, and we've certainly had lots and lots of opportunity for our staff to be involved all the way through it. And indeed, our staff have been major leaders of a range of the workshops and the information sessions available to the broader community. Remembering that our staff, of our staff, 90% of them live in Geelong. They are Geelong residents and they care passionately about this community as well. But we have a lot of experts in this organisation and many of them actually provided, as I said, information and education to the broader community throughout the process around these issues. So, and can I just say, Geelong Council, you know, it might get a lot of negative press because it sort of seems like it's, you know, a fun thing to do is kick the council every now and then. But the Geelong Council has actually led the way. It's one of only three in Australia who have, you know, who've reached recognition in terms of the a sustainability agenda. So, you know, we've set the bar in terms of the urban forest strategy. There's a whole range of processes in relation to planning that have set the bar in relation to ensuring that environmental values are protected and developed here in the city of Greater Geelong. So environmentally, we've certainly already undertaken a lot of leadership. But that's not the only area. We've also taken a whole lot of leadership in relation to supporting the development of jobs and establishing Enterprise Geelong and, you know, supporting new businesses in the area. Certainly in relation to designing the city for people, we've taken the lead with the Geelong Authority in the revitalisation project and developing an urban design framework for the city and the region. So, and we're taking huge initiatives in relation to pedestrianisation, bike paths and all sorts of opportunities to connect people both through active and inactive and public transport. So I think that, you know, we can't underestimate that the city of Greater Geelong has already led these things. The difficulty is that actually, Geelong is a growing and changing community, and it's very difficult sometimes for the community to recognise that, you know, when you're growing this fast and this much, you know, things change. And how to ensure that that's a balance is the important question, not whether or not things should change. And so I think politically, the biggest challenge we've got is that the councillors are able both to listen to the community and ensure that maybe the way they implement this change considers the concerns and tries to minimise the concerns that people might have about change. But it would be, you know, a shame if all we thought was, a councillor's thought about, was that they want to remain popular. Because if they want to remain popular, then all they will do is respond to the relatively few voices of the people that really, really don't want any change.
And that leads into the election debate. Do you think this paper, this vision we have now, will become integrated in the election debate?
I would hope it does. I would hope that the platform for this election debate is actually about councillors take it upon themselves, or rather candidates for councillors take it upon themselves to think clearly about how they will contribute to this vision and this strategy for Geelong. Because if Geelong gets this vision and strategy right, it will differentiate itself. It will be seen nationally and internationally as a clever and creative city. And the most important thing is that people will want to be in a clever and creative city and region, and they will. And if it is well balanced, it will be a jewel in the crown of Australia. So I have no doubt that the future is very bright for the city of Greater Geelong, and it would be even brighter if the candidates are positioning themselves around one or more of these central pillars that are outlined in this vision and strategy.
Connect with Geelong Sustainability, a community group working to create a smarter, fairer, healthier future for Geelong.
The Sustainable Hour.
Geelong Sustainability.
Sponsoring The Pulse.
So this is like almost like a start shot for a new era here in Geelong. That's how I feel about this vision. It's really, like I said, a watershed moment. Now we have to look 30 years ahead when we talk. Whatever decisions we make in the city, as individuals, as groups, as businesses, and as a council. And the big question, and this is the interesting part the next months, will be which kind of council are we going to get? Are we going to get people protecting their own interests? And, you know, first of all, we had a council with people who were said to be bullies. And will there be bullying between those who are for and want to protect this vision and those who are saying, no, we got to go in this direction. This is all bullshit.
Well, it's all everyone thinking about going for council. It's something they need to consider. It's 20,000 people have contributed to this, I think if they're not able to sign on to it in full support, they're probably not really wanting to be on council. I think it's as black and white as that. Really, it's been in the year in the making. Very few communities have gone through it in so much detail, and the people from council will be congratulated on that process. We often, and I'm just as guilty as anyone, criticise council, but I don't think that there's much to criticise about the process. But like anything, there's a document exists now, and it's how it's implemented is the key.
That's right.
How do you balance?
But that ball is thrown back to us, the voters.
Yeah,
because we can actually decide which kind of council we want.
Absolutely, Mick.
That's what voting is all about. That's democracy.
So how's it looking so far with people that have nominated? Who's?
I counted. Geelong Advertiser was had a bit of a list. There were seven people who had said, we are running for council. Out of those, five were old councillors. That's what I mean. You know, that's business as usual.
Yeah, you potentially. Know? I guess it gives them a chance for a fresh start, but it's not encouraging up front if five of the seven that are nominated. Now, I'm sure there's lots of others that are thinking about nominating, but that decision's going to have to be made fairly soon.
There is a
process. One of the good things that's being run is I've forgotten her name, Wild, I think, Women in Local Government. They're running a series of information sessions, and I hope that a number of the ladies will decide to run.
That's right.
You know, I think we need a gender balance in these things.
Yeah, we need a council that reflects what the city looks like.
Yes.
That's as simple as it is.
And to age as well.
Yeah, rich and poor, you know, there's got to be a bit of both.
Yes.
You know, we have some areas of the city that are not that rich.
Different age groups.
Yeah. We need
Aboriginals?
Yes.
Of course.
Yes.
Yeah. We need what the community looks like. We need that reflected in our civic leaders. And we hope we get that.
So I'm sort of, you know, contemplating, I don't know about you guys, to run for council.
Yeah, good on you, Mick. Well, you're an Aussie now, so you can do that.
Well, I hope you rushed down last Friday and put yourself on the electoral roll.
Well, I don't know. What about you?
Well, I could possibly, I don't think I'd do a good job as a councillor, but I could put my name down as part of a ticket. I could look at that to, because it seems like people going as independents often don't, you know, for all sorts of reasons, don't get the votes that they deserve. So, yeah, I could.
Creating an Our Future ticket.
Yeah, yeah.
A vision ticket. So you're either, if you're in that ticket, or if you vote for somebody who's in that ticket, then it means you're definitely voting for this vision.
Yeah.
It's like an acknowledgement. I want that vision. Vote for these people. That's a good idea.
Yep.
How does that work? Is that something formal that actually gets on the paper that, when people vote?
You'd never get a political party formed in the time we've got left. So.
Does it have to be a party, though?
I don't think it could be unofficial.
No. Yep. Yeah. Mm. We'd have to look into that, Mick. But, I've seen it happen in other places. I'm not in Victoria, but I can't see why it wouldn't.
Well, I've got to be careful what I say today because apparently I'm on Dennis's.
Are you running?
I'm on Dennis's. Rusty for mayor. I've seen the signs are up.
I saw that too.
And what was in the background? The solar plant.
Rusty for mayor. That's a good one.
But the solar plant was sitting behind it for a particular reason, because that fits with the vision and the plan that we should be talking about renewable energies for the in this town.
Absolutely.
You know, we need to bring employment back, and that's a nice, clean employment project.
Yeah.
So my political views will be aired tomorrow in Dennis's program.
Good. We'll have to listen to that one.
Tune in then, 9:30.
The thing, Cathy kept mentioning balance, and in any attempt to receive balance, the environment always gets shafted. That's in my experience. So how we achieve that, I think there are some communities that are working out what their carrying capacity is. So any growth that comes, there's limits to it. So it'd be nice to think that we could come up with that rather than just accepting this growth mantra as a given, because we've seen it all over the place. And there's, you know, we talk about balance, but it's got to be more than talk. It's got to be action on it.
This is a sensitive topic for a debate, you know, for a real election debate. Let's talk about that openly. Let's get it out and let's talk about the truth about things. You know, like I mentioned also with Dr. Cathy Alexander, climate change is around the corner. You know, we haven't seen the impacts really.
Well,
if science is correct, then we are in for some trouble there.
Yeah, we're facing a climate emergency, and there's more and more people saying that openly.
There is another council report talking about agribusiness, and I'd encourage people to slip that in the next day or so, because there's a special council meeting next week that's been slipped in. And one of the things that's going up is that report. So anyone on the Ballerine Peninsula and anyone in agribusiness should look at that very closely and try and make a comment, because one of the things that's in there is the pressure on these farms for being carved up.
Yeah.
That's one of the ways we get the growth. Imagine, you know, the pressure that's going to come on the Ballerine Peninsula.
Because people want to build houses there.
Of course.
Yeah.
Well, you can catch a ferry to Melbourne to work, you know, and it's a nice little spot. So there's a lot of pressure coming on those areas, and that's something that council are already starting to address in this report.
Rusty, thanks for the insight into that. So agribusiness, is there any mention in that about soil carbon, sequestering carbon, using land?
As we talked about a full hour last week, which was interesting.
It's a bit higher level.
Higher level than that. Yeah, okay.
We've got to look at that after the show.
Yeah.
Now, boys, there's a month running out, and what a month it was. It was the plastic-free month. Was it plastic-free for you guys?
Not quite for me.
It's almost hard. My goodness, we are surrounded by plastic. I gave up. I must admit, I gave up. I was very ambitious in the beginning. But after a couple of weeks, you know, I have three small children, and everything you go and buy and da-da-da. I must say, I visited some of these shops where you get things in paper bags and so on a couple of times, and that was a really good experience, so I'll do more of that. But I really find it hard to avoid plastic. What I have started is that I'm now sorting the plastic much better. We now have in the house a place where we put the soft plastic.
Yep.
We didn't have that before. You know, so at least there's progress, progress. This was my report.
In the soft plastic was really encouraging, because if you can get rid of that, there's rather than throwing in landfill, there's very little rubbish that you'll ever have. But in Footscray anyway, the Coles, aren't taking it anymore. So I don't know if that's across... I know both Coles and Woolies have done it in the past in Geelong, but well, I don't know. That's something I'm going to check out today.
And this was the news that broke in the plastic-free month of July here, was that Coles and Woolworths are now going to ban plastic bags, you know, handing out these free plastic bags. That's something. That's billions of plastic bags that we save that don't have to be produced because now people have to bring their own bags.
So that's progress.
That was a really good step forward.
We still have to be very careful about what the replacement is because some of the things they're talking about replacing these single-use bags will have nearly as much devastating effect as those ones.
Yeah, so we've got to make
it's
a wise
It's subject
choice.
To a future program.
That's right.
And I think we'll have Robert back and cover something like that.
Yeah, yeah. It's got to be done correctly and wisely.
Yep, that's it.
Now, let's make a jump to a cafe where we're going to meet, I would say, probably the leading expert, the guru, when it comes to living without plastic. Her real name is Erin Rose, but she's called Ginger Rogue, or Rogue Ginger.
And Mick, just a bit of a shout out for the cafe. It's Choo Choo in straight over the road from Moonee Point Station, and they're just starting out, but they're trying to be as sustainable as possible, as little impact as possible. So we've organised to have a chat with them down the track as well. So and
inspirational for
cafes
exactly. here in Geelong.
Exactly. That's exactly.
Right. All right. So over to the cafe and over to you, Tony.
Our next guest on the Sustainable Hour is Erin Rose, a.k.a. the Rogue Ginger. And we're sitting in a cafe in Moonee Ponds, which is a great atmosphere. So we're just going to have a bit of a chat to Erin about what's happened in her life in the last 5 years. So enough from me. Erin, tell us a little bit about yourself and how all this happened.
So I live what is called a zero waste life, and I can fit the last 3 years of my rubbish into an old coffee jar. So I started on this crazy journey 5 years ago when I learnt about just the horrible impact our rubbish, and particularly our plastic rubbish, is having on just about everything in the world. Discovered this by watching a documentary called The Clean Bin Project, and basically after the documentary finished, I jumped on the internet and I decided I wanted to find a way to reduce my plastic. I discovered Plastic Free July, and I did that 31-day challenge of reducing my plastic, so like my plastic bags, plastic drink bottles, I wouldn't get takeaway coffee anymore, no plastic cutlery, no plastic takeaway containers. And after that 31 days, I developed new habits, I was eating better, I was supporting local business, saving, and the best thing was that my plastic reduced down to pretty much nothing, and I just had to keep going because I just felt like I was doing a great thing, and yeah, just all those improvements in my life.
Okay, so I imagine rather than being all at once, it was a gradual thing or not so?
Yeah, it was a gradual thing. After that 31 days of Plastic Free July, I didn't just come home and say, right, I'm plastic free and toss everything out. It was a very slow process. I still use some of my old plastic containers at home because a lot of energy, a lot of resources went into those. And so if I just threw them out, I wouldn't be putting value on them pretty much. But just the way I shopped changed. So instead of going to my supermarket, buying prepackaged food, I now go to bulk food stores and I buy my food in reusable bags, reusable jars. I just don't get new packaging each time. I just reuse old jars that I've got at home, old containers, my cleaning products, honey, pasta, soy sauce, oil, chocolate. I can even get sushi rolls. Anything that I need, I can get at a bulk food store unpackaged.
Okay, now what would you say to the people who say that, well, that's good, but I can't do that. It's going to take way too much time for me to do it. How did you manage that?
Well, I agree.
How do you manage it?
It did take a bit of time at the start, but it took time because I was changing habits. I was changing close to 30 years of consumer habits, and that's the hardest part. Once you've got some new habits, you know, integrated into your life, it becomes perfectly normal to go to the bulk food store instead of going to the big supermarket, going to my local butcher or deli, having a conversation with these people, having a conversation at the bakery. You know, all these people know me now. I'm a lot more involved in my community. But it was just making those changes, making those new habits, that was the hardest part.
There is one thing from being not using plastic, it's another not having any waste at all. So what's been the process for you in doing that?
So again, the more I reduced my plastic, the less rubbish I was producing. I also did things like composting as well. Australian bins are made up of 40% of food waste. So once I learnt ways to, you know, compost or use up food scraps, become a bit more of a savvy shopper, that reduced as well. Also things like repairing items, sharing stuff rather than buying things that were new, buying secondhand, you know, all these small steps. The zero waste lifestyle kind of follows a philosophy of refusing, reusing, reducing, reusing, repairing, choosing things that rot, and recycling as the last resort. It's pretty much so nothing goes to waste.
There's a lot of a bit of an R theme in all of that.
And very, yeah, very big R theme.
Okay, now you've just been talking before, and you've got a 3-month-old son.
Yes.
Now, what challenges has that thrown at you?
None yet, because obviously he's 3 months and his needs are very, very small. But I do see in the future that it will get a little bit harder as he is introduced to our, you know, consumer lifestyle. The way I live is very different to how everyone else lives in this world. But we've got some plans in place. You know, obviously we're doing reusable nappies, which has been great, a huge money saver, and we bought those secondhand. Same with all of his clothes, we got those secondhand, we got those given to us from friends and family too. All of his furniture in his baby room, everything we got was secondhand, so we spent next to nothing, and we, you know, saved on buying anything new, and we'll put that back into society as well for more people to use, so nothing goes to waste. When it comes to toys, we've signed up to a toy library, so we'll be renting out toys, and that'll be a great way to teach our son to really look after items, because someone else is going to use them. They belong to somebody else, and also save us money, and also save our house being cluttered with toys, hopefully.
Exactly, and that's a really community involvement initiative as well, the toy library. Now, the nappies intrigue me a little bit. So many parents find it really difficult to go down that path. So how did you do that?
We just bit the bullet straight away and we did it. I will say, I do understand the draw of disposable nappies. Being a new parent, it's exhausting. But I think once you just get those nappies going into your system, you know, at the start it might take a bit long, but now it's 15 minutes out of my day. I think about it this way. My great-grandparents, my great-grandmother, she would have done the washing. You know, she had to do it without a washing machine, and it would have been a lot harder with those old terry toweling and stuff. So I've got it pretty easy if I think about it that way. I can just pop into the washing machine, walk away, come back and get it out. And it saves money. It saves me having to put the bin out if I needed to. Yeah, my son loves them. He has no idea.
Yeah. And the thing about this sustainable life is that, you know, you talk about it's as well as doing things for the planet, you're saving yourself. That's something you've mentioned a number of times now, that money that you save doing that.
Definitely. We would say we've saved probably about $8,000 to $10,000 a year. Just being, not just about, you know, reducing our waste, but I think during this process we've become very conscious consumers. You know, we're aware that where we spend our money is very important. We've got the power to dictate how things are made, where they're made, and the kind of conditions that they're made under. And I don't want my money to affect someone else in a bad way, and that's not the world I want to live in. So I am very careful about where my money goes. I'm very conscious about, you know, supporting a sharing economy, about supporting my local businesses here in Victoria. We grow such great food here in Victoria, and I love going to my farmers markets and buying things in season. And yes, that does limit what I can cook with, but it's a lot more sustainable to eat local and eat seasonally and support these local farms rather than buying food from halfway across the world.
That doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, I really like grapes. and being able to buy them 12 months of the year. I think there's something wrong with that, and I don't appreciate them anywhere near as much. So it's all about those choices that you say, and it's really... Yeah, would you say that's empowered you to, like, one thing leads to another, is what I'm trying to say.
It seems to just do it seamlessly. You just seem to start, you learn about one thing and you go, oh, well, that's nice, I'll see what else I can do. It just kind of just happens in that way, you know, as you said about, you appreciate the food a lot more. I think in that way you kind of, some of those activities become really great moments. So a lot of the zero waste kind of pushes about collecting moments, not things. So like when I had that first peach in summer, I always remember that first day. It's so, so awesome. So it is that you start to appreciate things a lot more. Like, I'm having a cup of tea with you right now. I wouldn't get anything takeaway anymore. I instead take 5 or 10 minutes out of my day and enjoy my cup of tea in rather than, you know, rushing about.
Yeah.
And that's another thing. Like, I never ever thought to slow down before this lifestyle change. Now, I take those 10 minutes because I'm worth it. No one's telling me I have to go get takeaway and rush about. You know, that's my choice.
It sounds like you're off the treadmill there, to me.
Definitely off the treadmill.
And you're speaking as a person that was, you would readily admit that you were on the treadmill, so 6 years ago?
Yeah, I was definitely. I would never describe myself as a greenie or a hippie, or, you know, I barely recycled. You know, the thought of watching an eco documentary sounded really boring. I didn't really think about the environment or my impact ever. It just happened to be one movie that I watched and just changed everything.
Yeah, so it woke you up effectively.
Yes, very much woke me up.
Yeah, and no regrets about that?
No, not at all.
So what, I guess, like we've been talking for a while now, just one, if there's one message that you've got for someone who would like to undertake this journey, what would that be?
I would say if you're wanting to reduce your plastic, just start with those very everyday disposable items that have become so ingrained in our life but have not been around that long, so we can take them out. So I'm talking your plastic bags, those takeaway coffee cups, plastic cutlery, plastic straws, plastic takeaway containers. You know, 50, 60 years ago, these weren't that big of an option for us. So they haven't been around forever, and human beings thrived for a very long time without them. We thrived without them even, but our environment is not thriving today with them. So just step up and just start saying no to some of these items. And another thing I would say is just do the best you can where you are with what you've got. That's what I always think. Don't look at all these problems and think, oh, it's too much to take on. Just chip away with just one item at a time, and it'll just get easier to make changes as you go forward.
And what's the consequence of that? What's the consequence of that been for you in your life?
I guess living with intention, living with kindness, living with responsibility, and I feel like my life's a lot more whole, and I feel a lot more in control of my life, I suppose, because I've learnt to step back and question everything. And my husband's the same, and hopefully my son will be the same, to step back and question all these things we've been told is necessary. Do you need 5 different types of soap to clean your body? No, one bar of soap does just the same thing. Same with moisturiser. Do you need all these different moisturisers to tackle all these different parts of your body? One will do the trick. It's, once you step back and learn to ask those questions, you will feel empowered as a human being, and you'll feel empowered to make changes, not just in your life, but help others too.
Terrific. And so it's about challenging you. Or examining assumptions that haven't been examined in the past?
Exactly. Examining that assumed convenience that has been crossed upon us. So many things that are in our life that aren't convenient, aren't necessary, and we've just been, you know, told we need them without being taught to step back and question if we do.
Okay, Erin, or aka Rogue Ginger, we hope you don't stop being a rogue.
Never, can't stop now.
Thank you.
That's just so inspirational. What a hero. It's possible. And she shows how it can be done. Great interview.
Yeah, thanks, Mick. She's a living proof. I guess that's what inspiration is. She's written about it. She's got a blog, which is well worth checking out.
It's just an experiment in action. She doesn't claim. She's just an ordinary person that got fired up about something and just kept saying, "Well, what can I do next?
That's right.
Her life isn't. She admits openly that it's her life is much better for it.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's the good news. It's actually both fun and it's not just a challenge. It's actually something that adds something to your life.
Yeah.
One place where they don't hand out plastic bags is when you go to the farmer's market. Now in South Geelong, every fortnight there's a farmer's market and I go there and get my vegetables and I love this feeling that, you know, you're closer to the people who produce the food, like you get the honey that they've made themselves and all these things that are for sale in these, in these places. It's a great revival of something very, very old. It goes back to how many thousands of years haven't we had markets where we went and got what we needed, you know, for our cooking and so on. And here in Geelong, a new market is on its way. Suzette, welcome to the studio. Suzette Jackson, you, I know, have been working for a while on starting a market in the west of town. Is that right?
That is correct, Mick, yes. And thanks for having me on the program. We have established a community group that called the Bowen Fair Food Network. And that community group is about to set out the first of its Paco Farmers Markets. And that farmers market will be based in Geelong West. And that will be a fortnightly market to complement the one in South Geelong. So we'll be on the 2nd and the 4th Saturdays starting in September.
Okay. But tell me then, you know, can it actually run? Is it good business for the farmers?
Well, it's a great business for the farmers, and particularly small to medium scale farmers and emerging farmers. So we've got in our region a number of small farmers starting back in, and it's great to see we're getting some younger farmers out, market garden style, doing vegetables a lot, but also mixed produce. So we're doing, you know, seeing a lot more farmers out there doing small amounts of farm animals as well as vegetables and fruit production. And so we really want to encourage that. And as you say, you know, markets have forever and ever been the way that farmers have been able to sell directly and maximise their profits direct to consumers and really understand what the consumers want and have that engagement. And for consumers and residents, that's the way that we can understand what's being grown in our regions and support those farmers, because we really need more farmers in our region, not less. And we want more diversity and more small to medium scale farmers so we can actually get people earning a livelihood out of it.
And last week we heard this new concept of urban farming. We had a little clip, you know, in Newcastle. They've started this project where people just in their backyards, you know, take it more seriously and make, even indoor, that you make food in the city.
That's right, and there's a resurgence of that. And my grandparents had this fantastic backyard in Manifold Heights when I was growing up, and two-thirds of the backyard were raised garden beds, and they had a chook shed, and they had the rainwater tank, and they had their fruit trees. And so much came produce at the table came from their backyard, and we tend to lose a lot of that. But growing food is one of those essential things that we all deal with, but it's a great way to actually get involved in your local community, because we have community groups that do passata, we have community groups that come together and brine olives, we have community groups that make jams and preserves, and swapping produce from your backyard. So it's all part of that language that we all understand and we need more of. So for us, this, and it was interesting, Anthony, that you said about, you know, this woman who was talking about plastic-free, was talking about, you spoke about how she was passionate, and it's just an ordinary individual passionate about what she's doing. And this is exactly what the Bowen Fair Food Network is. It's a committee of 9 individuals who are passionate about local food, sustainable production, biodynamics, organic food. And as part of that process with the Paco Farmers Market, which will be established in September, we'll be going for plastic bag free. So we'll be asking the stallholders not to have any plastic bags to hand out. It'll be paper bags. We'll have membership with Paco Farmers Markets jute bags and cooler bags for meat and dairy products. And we'll be encouraging people to minimise their waste as much as possible and compost their food. And we're looking to have a compost facility at the farmers market itself. So really engaging with the residents in the community in Geelong, but also looking to also engage with the community groups in the region and support people like the Geelong Organic Gardeners and the permaculture groups and those sort of people.
That makes a lot of sense.
That sure does.
Yeah.
Local.
Great.
Local.
And sharing the passion.
Yes.
This is really the fun part of it, and that's the message that we need to spread.
Most definitely. And can I just say, the Bowen Fair Food Network has Incorporated Association has been set up as the organisation to run the farmers market, and any surplus revenue from that will be reinvested back into the community. So this is a farmers market by the community, for the community, with the anticipation that we'll be able to generate additional projects for it.
Social enterprise.
Yeah. Suzette, speaking of what we can do for the community, we have been talking almost the full hour today about that there's a council election coming and that we actually should consider running for council. And I said, I'm going to do it.
Excellent.
I'm going to run for council.
Fantastic.
No, why not? You know, we have to step up now. We have to stand up for our passion, as we just talked about. How about you?
Look, I'm very interested in the council process, and I will be attending the women forums that are being run. There's four of them being run in the next month for women who are interested in being on council. I'm not quite at the position where I'm ready to
take it up. You make it inspired, though. I can see there's
but
a little... There's
I am interested in the process and understanding more about it. So maybe down track, that would be something of interest. But now it'd be great to see more women attend the Wild organisation's presentations in the next month, and get more people and more women involved in the process, understanding the process and how they might be able to contribute. Yeah,
the old council had two women and 11 men.
Yes. Well, let's see if we can get 11 women and two men.
Yes, so, that's a worthy aim, I reckon.
Well, I think it should reflect, we talked about that, it should reflect what our society looks like.
Most definitely.
So let's go for 50-50 in that case. That's all we could fit in the Sustainable Hour.
And can I just put one thing in? We'll be having on the Digit program at 10 a.m. this Saturday morning, we'll be talking more about the Paco Farmers Market and the Bowen Fair Food Network. And we'll have our new market manager on board to talk to us then. And a couple of farmers who are already committed to being as storeholders at the market will be on the program as well. So join us at 10 a.m. on Saturday morning at the Pulse.
Right.
Fantastic. And we'll come along to the market and interview people on the spot down the track.
Oh. Come along and be there. We'll be trying to broadcast on the day, I think.
Yeah. And obviously.
You won't complain if some musicians decide to come along and play a bit of music?
Magicians or musicians?
Musicians. The both of them.
We want community involved.
It's exciting times. It's time for change in Geelong, and things are happening. That's great. So that's all. Rusty? Tony?
Yes, Tony. Be the change.
This is the news on 94.7 The Pulse.